In the early 1980s, an estimated 200,000 Guatemalans were killed in a genocide carried out by the country's military. In December 1982, as part of what was described as an anti-guerrilla campaign, government soldiers attacked the village of Dos Eres, killing over 250 people. But there were a few survivors, and one of them, a five-year-old boy at the time, was taken by one of the lieutenants and raised as his own son. Joining me now to tell the story of Oscar Alfredo Ramirez Castaneda is ProPublica's Sebastian Rotella. He's written Finding Oscar, Massacre, Memory, and Justice in Guatemala. I'm very pleased to welcome him to today's second backstory segment. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So why did the government launch an offensive against the small rural village of Dos Eres in 1982?
It was part of a systematic policy that year after a coup that brought the dictator Rios Montt to power. Which was really the height of the bloodshed of the Guatemalan Civil War, that where there was a systematic policy of going after guerrilla areas or perceived guerrilla areas and basically search and destroy missions that ended in hundreds of massacres like Dos Eres, not all of them of the same dimensions, but some of them where basically everyone in a certain area was considered the enemy, including, you know, women and children, and that's what happened in Dos Eres.
So women were raped and killed, children were thrown down a well, 250 people in all killed. And was this just an object lesson to people to not engage in guerrilla activities?
Well, in this case, it actually there had been an ambush nearby where some rifles had been taken and some soldiers had been killed, and this special elite commando squad was sent in to looking for the rifles, theoretically, and to teach the people a lesson. But in fact, it was not a stronghold of guerrillas. It was a village that they never did find the rifles, but sadly, this village ended up becoming a target, and the kind of deadly, you know, medieval logic of operations at this time resulted in this slaughter.
And the person you've written about, Oscar Alfredo Ramirez Castaneda, was one of only two children to survive.
Right. I mean, it's a remarkable story because in the midst of all these horrors, for whatever reason, these two soldiers, one of them, this Lieutenant Ramirez, who was the number two in this unit, this commando unit, decides to take this little boy, he was three at the time, and to take him home. The lieutenant ends up dying in a truck accident a few months later, but the family raises Oscar as one of their own. They treat him very well. He was too little to remember. He had no idea of his true origins, so he's raised in this family, a kind of a middle-class, striving family, taught to revere this lieutenant whom he thought was his father and who had actually been responsible for killing the rest of his family. He had eight brothers and sisters and a mother who were killed in that, but his father survived. So Oscar grows up. He finishes high school. Things are tough in Guatemala. He sets off for the United States, as so many of his countrymen and women had. And he, you know, builds a life for himself in a suburb near Boston, working hard and raising a family with four kids.
Well, the man he thought was his father, Lieutenant Ramirez, was known for his cruelty and his thievery. He worked as a mercenary in Nicaragua for a time. Was Oscar aware of any of that when he was growing up?
Oscar knew nothing about that until there was a weird glimmer when he was in the year 2000. He had just made it to the United States, and the prosecutors in Guatemala, after the end of the Civil War and the peace accords, the investigations began of atrocities, and some very determined prosecutors working against the odds managed to turn to find a couple of repentant commandos from this squad who told them all about the massacre and about these two. There were actually two boys. Oscar was one of them. And so there was a newspaper story published in Guatemala saying that prosecutors were looking into this and that they believed that Oscar may have been a survivor of this massacre. And so he got a call from Guatemala telling him about it. This is, you know, about 12 years ago. But, you know, basically his family in back in Guatemala told him that's nonsense. It's leftist propaganda. It can't be true. So he didn't really, you know, he sort of put it out of his mind. He was illegal. He was busy here with his wife and kids and going on about his business. So he didn't really think about it again until last year, when the investigation took a dramatic turn, where actually more investigation happened. DNA testing was done that proved that he was a survivor, because his father had survived too. His father had been away providentially from Dos Eres that day, so he had survived, but he thought his entire family had been wiped out. So all of a sudden, this young man is in Framingham, Massachusetts, and he ends up getting an email from a prosecutor informing him that his entire life has been based on a lie, that there's a strong suspicion that he is a survivor of this massacre, that his real father is still alive. He agrees to have a DNA test done, and that proves it conclusively. So all of a sudden, he's dealing with all these incredible revelations.
Now, the events in Dos Heres were blamed on the leftists. The soldiers disguised themselves as leftist revolutionaries. Did people believe that at the time?
Not the people I think everyone in those, the survivors, shall we say, because there were families in the area and people around, were convinced from the beginning that it was the military. And in fact, even the U.S. Embassy, which had been kind of desultory about looking into these massacres that had been happening in previous months, actually did a reasonably aggressive inquiry, went out there and wrote an unusually blunt cable to Washington saying, we believe the military has done this. It was pretty commonly known, but one thing is knowing that, and the other thing is proving it. It has taken since almost 30 years to really start bringing people to justice for it. Only in the past couple of years has evidence been put together and have trials happened where five of the people involved in the massacre of the soldiers have been convicted in Guatemala, and a couple of others, because at least four of them came north. Not only did some of the victims come north, but the victimizers did too. Some have also been arrested in the United States. But there's still, people out there, including the commander of the unit, who are fugitives today.
My guest is Sebastian Rotella, who wrote Finding Oscar: Massacre, Memory and Justice in Guatemala. He reported the story in partnership with Ana Arana, a journalist with Fundación MEPI, journalist Habiba Noshin, and This American Life producer Brian Reed, who produced an hour-long radio version of the story. Sarah Romero was the prosecutor assigned to the Dos Heres case. How much evidence did she have when she first started working on the case?
She didn't have much. I mean, she knew there had been one little boy who had been on the fringes of the massacre and had managed to escape. He was about 11, so there was eyewitness testimony, but that was one kid, and he didn't, and he was 11, and that wasn't enough to go on. She did an incredible investigation, as did a human rights activist named Aura Elena Farfan. And what was remarkable about this case, and the reason it's been the first of these hundreds of atrocities that has been prosecuted in this way, is that this human rights activist, Aura Elena Farfan, manages to enter into contact by giving radio interviews a repentant member of this elite commando squad, a guy who had actually been the cook of the squad but was a soldier and had participated in the massacre, contacts her and tells her, this massacre, this was 1996, so the massacre had happened years before, but he says, this thing has been haunting me. And he tells her the whole story. And so now she's got an eyewitness, and he convinces another soldier, another commando, to come forward. So now they've got something extraordinary, which is two repentant participants in the massacre who can sort of, along with the forensic evidence, because there was an exhumation, so the skeletons had been found, they have eyewitness testimony, and they have this information on these two boys who are, in essence, living proof of the massacre. Because you have, as much as the military denied it, you have two little boys who have been brought up by members of this commando squad who were from the village. So they were able to put together a pretty remarkable case thanks to their bravery and determination.
And it is bravery, because don't many Guatemalans remain reluctant to talk about what happened during the Civil War? Because in some cases, soldiers are still assigned to the areas where they killed people.
Absolutely. Soldiers are assigned to the areas. The military still has great power. A lot of the people who were involved in the repression and the killing and the torture either retain political or military power or have become part of the very strong mafias that are involved in crime and drug trafficking and other kinds of activity there. And Guatemala is a place where there's just a lot of lawlessness. Even, basic street murders don't get prosecuted, let alone massacres from the past. So this is rare. The prosecutors have endured threats. They've endured attacks. Witnesses in other cases have been killed. But in the past couple of years, there's really been kind of a change in atmosphere, and things are starting to move forward, thanks in part to a very courageous attorney general who took over a couple of years ago. So there is some hope, but it's by no means easy, and by no means, this is just a small step in the right direction.
Well, we've heard of other instances where in countries like Argentina, Brazil, and Chile, children were kidnapped during civil wars after their parents were killed. Was this also common in Central America?
There were different sort of versions of it. I was based in South America, and I did stories in Argentina in particular with kids who had been recovered, and in one case I covered by their grandparents. In Argentina and in El Salvador in particular, it was much more systematic. It was like a racket where there was really kind of this hideous bureaucracy created to appropriate these kids, sometimes have the abducted sort of prisoners of war, the guerrillas, give birth to the kids, kill the mothers, and then give or sell them to families, often military or conservative families. So it was kind of a systematic racket, sometimes for profit, but also with an ideological goal, which was to sort of wipe out a future generation of subversives, quote-unquote, by having them brought up by people with a different ideology. In Guatemala, it was a different variation. There's supposedly at least 300 cases of kids that where it's thought that this happened, but it was more opportunistic, more haphazard. And in a poor rural society, what happened with a lot of these kids, in fact, the other boy who was abducted by Oscar, his experience was like this. These kids were often used by these soldiers around the house as, or around the farm as field hands, as labor, as slaves, and they were badly treated and made to sleep in barns and work very hard and beaten. Oscar's case was unique because he was raised well and he was treated well and he was really treated as one of the family. But this did happen in Guatemala, but in this kind of strange kind of opportunistic approach where almost on a whim, soldiers in the midst of wiping out entire villages where lots and lots of babies and children were killed for whatever reason, spared and brought home the kids.
Now, as you've mentioned, a large part of the story takes place in the United States, where many of the people involved in the events at Dos Eras, including Oscar, ended up. How did American law enforcement help Guatemalan prosecutors build their case, and why was the Guatemalan government willing to hand over the information to the United States but not to their own country's prosecutors?
It's interesting. I mean, it shows how much times have changed, from a country whose security forces were got so much support from in the midst of these atrocities from the United States. You flash forward to a couple of years ago, and all of a sudden, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement is going after these guys. What happened was Immigration and Customs Enforcement has a unit that goes after war criminals and human rights abusers in the United States, of which there are a lot from around the world. And they started tracking down these commandos. There was a list. These commandos, they knew they were being prosecuted in Guatemala, though the prosecution was essentially stalled, and these commandos were quote-unquote fugitives, some sitting right there in Guatemala, but others were in the States. And they started tracking them down, and because of the relationship between the U.S. and Guatemala and the need for different kinds of support and whatnot, financial support and aid on the drug front and so on, yes, the Guatemalan authorities were more willing to share information with Immigration and Customs Enforcement on these commandos as they were arrested in places like Florida and California and Texas than they were with their own prosecutors who were hunting for the same people. In fact, some of the breakthroughs in this case were one commando in particular, in a very dramatic story, is tracked down by federal agents at his home in Florida. And they sort of sit down with him and start talking, and he basically just, the confession pours out of him, and he tells them the story of Dos Eras and how he killed a baby, throwing it down the well, and weeps as he tells them. And that confession ends up making its way into the Guatemalan case file and bolstering the prosecutions that are going on now.
And three former commandos have already received sentences. Tranquilino and Oscar have talked over video chat and Skype, but they met for the first time earlier this week. Now, what has Oscar's reaction been to the fact that he is just learning his story and has met his father for the first time?
I mean, it's really remarkable. It's so overwhelming. And Oscar's a serious, hardworking, he's a guy who works two full-time jobs, four kids, family man, quiet, thoughtful, and he's wrestling with all these emotions and revelations.
25 seconds, Sebastian.
Yeah. So basically, he's happy as can be that his real father is with him and that he's gotten to know him, but he still respects and the memory of the lieutenant who saved him. He says, no matter what he did, the fact is he saved me, and I was brought up by that family as one of their own. So he's wrestling with this remarkable emotional and psychological balance about these horrible facts of the past.
We have links to Sebastian's story as well as the story about Oscar's reunion with his father earlier this week on our show page, where we have a link to the This American Life story as well. My great thanks to Sebastian Rotella, who wrote Finding Oscar, Massacre, Memory, and Justice in Guatemala. And thanks for being on Backstory.